Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslowski. My guest and I are bringing the sass today, and I hope you're bringing the funk. Hey, it's just like sports. You can't have the D without the fence. This is episode number 67. Oh man, it's awesome to have you listening to this episode of the show. It never gets old knowing that you trust me enough to bring you something valuable and appreciate what I'm cranking out to give me your full, okay, I know I might not have your full attention all the time, most of your attention. I'm just grateful for the chance to make your life better, so thank you a ton for letting me rattle around your eardrums. Now, for you longtime listeners, I want you to figure out if the intro and outro for this episode sounds different. And why? Why would that be? Well, because it's time for me to finally stand and deliver, baby. That's right. I finally got a standing desk. And let me tell you, it's two fairies short of magical. I've been wanting a standing desk for years, and now that the Uplift 900 is my constant companion, we're taking things up a notch around here. It's kind of funny. If you were to look around my home office right now with my old desk that I need to get out of here, it's about 2 feet away against the far wall from my standing desk. And if I ever needed validation that I'm abnormally tall, which, by the way, I don't need validation, it's wacky to see the height of my sitting desk against my standing desk. Pictures will be coming sometime in the future. All right, I'm going to skip the Simple Rev experience curating South by Southwest and the other updates today because I want to bring you the grooviness, the sassiness, and the insight from my friend Sophia Berra post-haste. She and I had a great conversation a couple weeks back, and now that her new book has been published, it's called What You Should Have Learned About Money But Never Did, I dig her even more. You'll hear yourself, the main theme of this book is how to use your money to match your values and achieve your dreams. So here's what we are going to give you in this episode. First, you'll hear the story about how Sophia went from corporate burnout to entrepreneurial spark plug. Then we're going to hit you with the key difference between financial independence and retirement and show you how that applies to your life. Then we're going to give you a little 1, 2, 3 of how to eliminate distractions that are costing you money and time. The context behind the great cash versus credit card debate, and why writing down your ideal day is so dang powerful. I don't know, it might just be the standing desk talking, but I'm feeling playful and ready to rock. How about you? Here we go. Hey, hey, Smart and Simple Matters listeners. It's always fun to chat with a guest who is a good friend, has ample smarts herself, and comes preloaded with a ton of sass. I'm talking with Sophia Berra today, a certified financial planner and the founder of Gen Y Planning. She typically works virtually with clients in their 20s and 30s and wakes up each morning stoked to help her fellow millennial generation have access to top-notch financial planning without already having a bazillion dollars in the bank. She's been featured in prominent outlets like Forbes and the Huffington Post, but Sophia's most recent work is her new Amazon Kindle ebook, and it's called What You Should Have Learned About Money But Never Did. So, Sophia, can I just say that I am jazzed to have you on the show?
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Joel. Thanks so much for that lovely, lovely introduction and for commenting on my sass already.
Yes,
I like that you just set it up for all the listeners out there.
Okay. I don't think I set any false expectations for it. You'll bring the sass whether we want it or not. And we do.
Oh, yeah.
We do.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Let's take it from the top. Every Smart and Simple Matters episode, I start with what I call the seeds of awesomeness so that people can get an understanding of who you are, why you are and what you are today. Can you give us one or two examples of some kind of foundational experience growing up, or maybe something about your environment as a youth that helps us understand what makes you tick right now?
Yeah, so I have a performance background, and I have been singing and acting for a lot of my life. And I actually do college study theater performance. So I'm an actor turned financial planner, which I think makes my approach a little bit different than most CFPs out there. Uh-huh. And I really love, you know, creating and performing. And I joke now that I get more TV gigs as a financial planner than I did as an actor. So it's funny when you are, you know, you think that these things in your past won't relate to what you're doing currently or, you know, your future career. And what I love is really being able to tie all of these pieces, these passions that I have into being an entrepreneur today. So it's really fun being able to land speaking gigs across the country and talking to different groups, giving educational workshops or being asked to speak, you know, on the news about student loans. And having that theater background really play a role in the work that I'm doing today.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, tying your passions together into being an entrepreneur. I'm somebody who's tried to do something similar. You know, I talk about it frequently, this term multi-potentialite, somebody with a diversity of interests, passions, and skills who tries to weave them into some coherent theme or brand. It's debatable how successful I've been with that. You have been more successful with that. But I know, you know, back in college, you were double major, theater performance and women's studies.
Yes.
And as we set the stage, you know, it's been a number of years since those days, and you've had a lot of other different experiences. So how does a woman who wants to be on the stage transition into a woman who spends more time on Skype with her clients than on the stage?
Yeah. For me, it's, I really love like educating. And so there, so it's really, that's one of the things that I love about working with my clients, is that I really approach it from like an educational standpoint. But you know, in theater, it's all about relationships and getting to know, you know, different your scene partner that you're working with, or getting to work with new directors. And that's what I love about kind of building this client base across the country, is getting to know all of these really great, smart, interesting young clients from all over. And really figuring out how can I help them use their money to match their values to achieve their dreams. And so a lot of that reminds me of my theater days of, you know, working with people from a bunch of diverse backgrounds, and with, you know, my women's studies training and whatnot, you know, how to connect with people who are different than you. And so really just like kind of taking those skills of kind of working with people on productions or working with different diverse populations, and being able to translate that into my work of working with, you know, dozens of millennial clients across the country that, you know, came from a variety of different backgrounds that really have the goal of being better with their finances, and figuring out how I can use, you know, my knowledge to be able to help them maximize their current financial situation so that they can achieve their dreams.
Well, just to make it clear for everybody, if you're not a millennial and we're not talking about your generation, I think that was the Who. I don't know if I've got that right. I'll have to look it up after the fact. There's still plenty of stuff which is good and relevant. I've known Sophia for a while, and a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, yes, it's oriented to a younger crowd, but if you find yourself and say you're in your 50s and you don't even live in the United States, for example, there is plenty of good stuff coming up. Because Sophia, as you were just mentioning, you know, the key thing for you is having people match their money with their values, and having those two be in alignment. I know that's incredibly tough, and I'm still making strides on that myself, and I'm nowhere near where I'd like to be. So maybe we can start out, let's start with you before we get into other people. What are a couple ways that you have developed the self-awareness necessary to align your money and your values?
Well, that's a great question, Joel. And I think that for me, it starts by taking a look at, there's a few different exercises that you can do. One of my favorite is writing down your ideal day. And I don't know if you've done this exercise before, but
I have. I've done a whole week because a day didn't seem like it would be realistic. I had to do a whole week.
I think a week is good. Yeah.
Continue.
No, I love that. But that exercise, just being able to write down, like, what do I want my day to look like? And once you kind of get past the, you know, that really unique day, like, what do you want that typical day to look like? What does that feel like? It's really fun to be able to then find things that you wrote down that, you know, mean something to you and incorporating those little by little into your current life. So a couple of years ago when I did that exercise, it involved me like being able to wake up when I wanted to and, you know, having like a healthy breakfast, being able to open my laptop and be at work, you know, be able to work from anywhere with an internet connection, heading to a coffee shop to work for a while, having lunch with my mom or meeting a friend for lunch, enjoying, you know, a dinner out with friends at a new restaurant. You know, those types of things I had kind of incorporated into my ideal day. And now what's really fun is realizing that my days are looking more and more like that. And so I really love being location independent. I love working from, you know, the ability to work from anywhere. And I really wanted to build a business that I could do that I could work from anywhere. I really value mobility and being in control of my time. So let
me ask you this. I'm catching themes. Freedom, you know, relationships are essential. Good meals. These are all really important to you. From the point where you wrote that down, where you did your own exercise that you're recommending people take now, to now, you know, how did you get on an intentional path that made your ideal day come somewhat close to what most of your days are like?
Yeah. So I guess I should say at the time, my days didn't look much like that at all. I was working at a startup and I was working like 60 hours a week. And it was just, I wasn't, you know, incorporating really any exercise much into my day. And that was something that was really important. And I think I just kind of started little by little realizing that I did want to launch my own business. And I started having these ideas and these themes kept reoccurring about what that business would look like, what those characteristics, you know, what characteristics that business would have. And so, you know, sometimes when we are starting to, you know, use our, you know, figure out what are those things, you really have to kind of dig deep and figure out, like, what are those things that you value? And like you were talking about, Joel, like, I really value relationships and, you know, time with loved ones and being able to experience things like a great meal or, and so figuring out, you know, what are those things that really bring joy to your life? And, you know, sometimes they're small things. Like I realize I love lighting a candle that smells good and, you know, writing in my journal before I go to bed. And just like incorporating that into my routine really brought me a lot of like joy and happiness. And that's just like a very, you know, small thing that I could do every night that was like kind of part of my bedtime routine that really like, you know, brought that, you know, a layer of like peace and happiness into my life. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, then there are bigger things like travel. I love to travel. And so that's always been something that has been a bigger expense that I've always saved money for every month so that I could take that big trip. You know, I really love that. Like, I don't regret that experience. So I realized that, you know, really investing money in experiences brought me a lot of value.
So saving money, having that good financial goal, making that big trip. I know that's a big part of what's in your book.
Yeah.
What you should have learned about money but never did. And part of it about creating those good financial goals, you are well qualified to break it down. But the folks who are listening to this episode, they have a lot of them, at least they have some pretty unconventional money goals. And I know one common one is to lessen the role that money has in their lives. Can you give a suggestion to a person who wants to opt out of the typical, at least American, hey, get a 401k or Roth IRA, you know, save for retirement, dedicate your life to your future life, you know, having contentment and abundance later when we could experience that right now. What would you say to somebody who wants to opt out of the traditional personal finance game and really dedicate their lives to earning only what they need to support themselves or their family, their local community?
Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Just kidding. No, I think that that's awesome because I think that people should absolutely challenge the way that, you know, the typical status quo and figure out, does that fit for them? And if not, if they know that that doesn't fit for them, then what, right? Then what are the next steps? And so I think that I love that your readers are kind of challenging those traditional money scripts or the kind of these traditional things, even though, you know, there's some of those things I think are still really important. I really like the idea of setting aside money for the future, saving money for, you know, for different opportunities, whether that's just having emergency savings and how important that is, or whether it's investing for financial independence. And I try to use the term financial independence instead of retirement, because I think that financial independence can come at any age. But I think, you know, starting by really taking a look at your life and what expenses you have in your life and paring down, you know, what things do you no longer need anymore? You know, what monthly expenses can you get rid of? And then, of those, you know, discretionary expenses, you know, which are providing you more value, which are providing you less value, and how can you kind of trim back there?
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So, cutting back is sometimes synonymous with simplifying, although I'm not one who just purges for the sake of purging and getting rid of things. There has to be a purpose behind it. And I know you have some tips in the book about saving money and then simplifying in the process. Like, those two things are directly related: cutting cable, cooking meals at home. Do you have some other things where their go-to, it doesn't really matter who you are, it's going to work for just the vast majority of people, that you would recommend?
In terms of kind of trimming your budget or
just simplifying the world of money, your relationship with it, the practical, what it looked like, how it manifests itself in your life, supporting your local farmer by getting in on community supported agriculture. That's another thing that you have in your book, making your own stuff. Imagine that, like, do it yourself, like, reuse, repurpose things. Don't automatically go out and buy something new. Can you make your own stuff, or can you repurpose something? Are there other things that have really worked well for you when it comes to simplifying the way that you approach money?
Yeah. So I don't really watch a lot of TV. And so it's so crazy to me how many Americans that's still, like, the cable bill is still huge. The special channels that people need. And I think when you kind of reduce, like, your TV consumption, or, you know, maybe you have Netflix, so you just watch, you know, a couple shows on Netflix or whatnot, and that's what, you know, $8 a month instead of $150 a month. You know, that not only frees up your time to be able to do those things that you really want to in your life, but it also, you know, frees up money from your monthly budget. And I would say too, like, figuring out, you know, where kind of, what are those distractions in your life? Like, what are those distractions that are costing you money, that, and how can you kind of eliminate those to be able to focus on things that you value, things that are more important in your life. And so if we think about it like that, in terms of, like, what is distracting us, you know, how can we simplify things in terms of, you know, our time, our money, then you really have some great shifts that allow people to be able to be more open to really delve into their creativity, or a side hustle. Is something that I talk a lot about in my book, which is, you know, what's that part-time gig or thing that you kind of do on the side to earn a little bit of extra money? Because I don't think it's all about cutting expenses. I think that that's where a lot of people in the personal finance space focus on, is just, you know, slashing your budget. But I really like the idea of, once you do figure out, you know, what that ideal life kind of looks like that you want to have, figure out what's the number you need to support that life. And like you were saying, it may be less than you think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's, you know, if it's more than you think, then what, you know, maybe what's that side thing that you can do to kind of reach those goals. And the other reason why I love side hustles, whether you're, you know, you're a freelance writer or you do web design or you are, you know, freelance photographer, a lot of times there's, you know, think about those things that you do, regardless if you would get paid for them or not. And is there a business there? Right. And what I see a lot of times is those people that, you know, spend a little extra time, you know, doing some freelance writing or doing the web design or doing those types of things. Slowly this becomes, you know, kind of a steady income stream. And that I've seen quite a few people make the transition from quitting their full-time job at, you know, W-2 income at an employer to being a freelancer full-time, or to doing, you know, that side project that they were just really passionate about has now become a full-time gig. And that is where you really see people, you know, aligning their money with their values, and their career with a career that they really value.
But there's a certain segment of the population, you know this better than I do, that almost can't afford to develop a side hustle or risk, you know, leaving their steady W-2, someone's paying me for a job. All those folks who have student debt. There's over $1 trillion in student debt just in America, and it's crazy pants. I know you agree that the level of student debt is just ridiculous. What would you, if you were the student debt czar of the United States of America, we should have one of those, by the way, what would you do, like your first couple of acts in order to give people the opportunity to pursue the side hustle more or get a greater sense of freedom and not feel trapped in this level of debt that they have?
Well, I really believe that entrepreneurship's the new job security for our generation. So I think that encouraging, you know, having education be also about like, you know, kind of all these other life skills too, right? Would be very fascinating, really interesting, whether it's, you know, how to come up with a profitable business idea, or whether it's learning to meditate, figuring out how to find happiness, you know, those types of things, right, aren't always taught in schools. But like from a very practical level, I think that there's things that could be done in regards to student loans that would be really helpful, such as each year, if you got a statement that said, as of right now, the balance of your student loans is X number of dollars, so $10,000, your monthly payment would be, you know, $152 a month for the next 10 years. I think that that might kind of change people's perspective when they realize like what that monthly breakdown is. Because a lot of people are just, you know, they're taking out these student loans when they're so young and they don't realize how that translates till they're older. But I also think that you're going to see, I mean, just the cost of education has skyrocketed so much. One thing that you're seeing in California right now is it's a lot more typical for people to go and get a 2-year degree at a community college and then transfer to like a 4-year state school once they already have their associates. And I think that that's going to become more common. And I also think that people are going to be getting like online, like maybe like an online 2-year degree and then transferring to a 4-year school. And then I'm curious to see how like education itself looks, you know, 10 or 20 years from now, considering how, you know, I'm still amazed that when you go into a school that there's a teacher standing in front of the classroom teaching, you know, 30 students, just like there was in like the 1950s when my parents were going to school.
The 1900s, so, the 1800s, wait, the 1700s.
Right. So I think there's going to be some radical changes with education in the next, you know, decade or two, and that that is going to change how, what college looks like, how we charge for college, all of that.
Well, who's responsible for teaching us about money? Because you write in the book that almost nobody learns how to manage their personal finances from their parents or from their school system or their local community. Like, where's the source besides going to you and you educating people? Like, where do you feel the go-to place, entity, you know, organization or individual that needs to teach kids at a really young age, this is what money is, and this is how you should start forming a healthy relationship with it?
Yeah. So there's not that right now. And I don't think that there's a good, like, kind of one-stop shop to do that. And I do think that more and more people are saying, wow, I didn't learn about money, from, you know, in school. I wish I would have, or I learned about money from my parents, or I learned about money when I started making my own financial mistakes and then I had to figure out how I was going to dig myself out of them. And so that's why I really wanted to create this book too, was because I wanted to kind of give people an overview of, as a financial planner, how I think about people's finances, and that it's not just about, it's not just about the dollars and cents, that it's more about aligning your money with your values. There are a lot of pieces of financial planning that people don't think about. They think, oh, financial planners just do things with investments and retirement planning. But there's a whole lot more than that. Like we were talking about earlier, figuring out a debt repayment plan for your student loans. You know, so you have these student loans. Now what? You know, should you pay off your private loans first? Should you pay off the ones with the highest interest rate first? Should you consolidate? Do you qualify for any of these federal programs? You know, so helping people navigate through that, figuring out proper insurance amounts to have, if they should be doing estate planning, what, you know, if they need a CPA because now they're running their own small business and, you know, some tax planning is going to be more important. So kind of taking people through these different areas of financial planning, is something that is really fun for me because a lot of people didn't realize how robust financial planning is. And they feel like, gosh, I don't really know where to go for these different things, which is why I launched my own company, Gen Y Planning.
Well, here's one I have for you. Yeah. This is a common one that comes up too, is a lot of people, a lot of folks that are minimalists or simple living enthusiasts, they swear by cash. And I am those things. I swear by credit cards. Any purchase that I can possibly put on a credit card, I do. Now, I pay off the balance every month. I generate rewards in terms of airline miles and cash back that I get. But more so, it gives me, I talk about leading an intentional life frequently, the ability to put it electronically, and then I use a personal finance software called Quicken, where I can aggregate all of my financial accounts in one place and then track them, categorize them, tag them, see who's spending what in what category. So I swear by credit cards. But for the people who say, you're not living life, like money's only real when you actually hold it. And if I can't hold it and I can't give it to somebody, then I don't want to spend it. Do you have some kind of recommendation for people in terms of how they make that determination, whether they would be better off using cash or credit to buy stuff?
So if you struggle with credit card debt of any kind, I would say to stay away from the credit cards. You should do what works for you. And so so for the people who are consistently paying off their credit cards every month, you know, I'm a lot like you, Joel. I love getting rewards. I'm going to Mexico next week and I used, you know, my ultimate reward points to book my flight there. And that was just, you know, from basically my last, you know, 6 months of spending for my business and for personal that I was able to get a free flight. So for me, I really value that. I really value being able to, you know, save money on travel. And if I'm already going to be spending the money anyway, I would rather get points for it and get rewarded. However, I think that there's another group of people that really need, that don't have as much of a handle on their monthly spending, and that it's really helpful to be able to use cash. So one thing that I suggest is figuring out like a weekly spending amount to spend for those discretionary items. I guess I should say those variable items. So things that change every month, like gas, groceries, eating out, shopping, clothes.
Your heating bill if you live in Minnesota and it's the wintertime when it goes up by about 10 times.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, versus like those bills that you know are kind of set that you pay every month. But yeah, so for those kind of those variable items, figure out, you know, what's a weekly, instead of looking at that as monthly, like let's say you have $1,000 a month for those items, divide that by four, gives you $250, and that's your weekly spending amount. And so for some people, it's really helpful just to take out that in cash, like every Friday, and then when it's gone, it's gone. And they can spend this money however they want, but when it's gone, it's gone. Other people, it's really, it's, you know, they would rather be able to, you know, to use a card. And so they might set up a separate checking account just for those discretionary items. Other people say, okay, if I have 1,000 in discretionary items, I'm just going to put that on, I'm going to use this credit card only for discretionary items and know that, you know, this is the amount that I have to spend on that. Mm-hmm. But I would say for those people that are really struggling to kind of keep their, get their spending in line and figure out where their money's going, cash can be really helpful for that.
Well, we've been, I just realized you talked about earlier, a lot of personal finance is about the spending side of things.
Yeah.
And we haven't really talked about the income or the investing side of things too. And I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to talk about that because I'm personally fascinated by it. And I know you have lots to say. Actually, this is kind of awkward. Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I think I've read probably the last 20 years worth of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway annual letters to shareholders. Have you ever read any of those?
Yes. And okay. I've been to the Berkshire Hathaway meeting a couple times.
Oh, man, I'm totally, oh, wow.
We should road trip it down to Omaha.
It's 6 hours. I was in Omaha last year for an event, and it's not that bad. It's a cool town, too.
Yeah. I have a friend down there. So, yeah, I've gone a couple times. I've stayed with her. And, yeah, and it's a fun place to go. Actually, I wrote him a letter a few years ago, and he wrote me back, Joel, like on his like Warren Buffett stationery.
Wow,
it's awesome.
That's really cool. We'll explore the potential for Omaha trips in the future. Where I was going with this is in 2011. I'm always amazed by how Buffett can simplify money, investing in particular. And he wrote in his letter in 2011 that investing is foregoing consumption now in order to have the ability to consume more at a later date. And I wanted to ask you, when you think of investing, do you think about it in the same way? Is it truly that simple, or is there more to it than that?
That's such a good question. And I love the way he put that, because I think that that's a really great way for people to think about it. When I think about investing, I think about giving yourself options and opportunities in the future. And I really want what a lot of my clients value is that flexibility and the ability to be able to take advantage of kind of future opportunities and not be limited. And so I kind of see investing as like increasing the option, like the future options that you have available to you.
Do you ever point out to your clients that how they invest, or let's say they're using some kind of mutual fund, which has 500 different stocks in a big basket, and 43 of those 500 stocks, if somebody were to actually stop and look at the company that they are passively investing in and see if their values, if that company's values lines up with their own personal values, they'd probably just say, what? Like, my money is going towards that? Do you have conversations with people to make sure that what they're investing in is in line with what they are, what they represent as a human?
You know, I don't have as many of those conversations with my clients unless they are really bringing that to the table. Because there's so many different companies, you know, within those mutual funds, that there would need to be so much research and so much analysis done that to be able to really break it down to that minute level would be challenging. But there are certain people that they really care about, like, it's like
socially or environmentally conscious. So for the person who's like, hey, I don't want any of my money going to the big oil companies or to big tobacco or a lot of these traditional whipping boys for big corporate interests, do you have a recommendation for the socially environmentally conscious person in terms of where they would start if they wanted to make sure that the money that they have, however much it is, that they're investing is in alignment with how they want to live their lives and the change that they want to see in the world?
I do have a few suggestions for that. And I have had clients come to me before with that specifically. There's a group that I really like called Parnassus Funds. And so that's one group to kind of take a look at. And they do a lot of socially conscious, you know, investing. So one thing to note is a lot of times those funds have higher fees associated with them because there's a lot more work that goes into, you know, making sure that there's not big tobacco or oil companies or whatnot in your portfolio.
So practically speaking, that means instead of paying, say, 1% of the money that I have invested every year, I'd pay 2% to that fund for managing my money. Gross oversimplification, but that's kind of what you're talking about in terms of more fees, right?
Yeah, that the expense ratio is higher. So the basically the mutual fund manager that you're paying to manage the fund, you have to pay them more because of the additional analysis that goes into that.
More overhead and yet more. Okay, got it.
Some people choose just individual stocks to invest in. I'm not as big of a fan of that approach. I tend to really like, I have a passive investment strategy. I really like index, you know, low cost index funds and ETFs.
Me too.
Yeah. And so, that just kind of tends to be a very kind of simple investment philosophy, because I think there's a lot of other things to focus on within financial planning as well that have nothing to do with. I always say like 80% of what I do has nothing to do with investing. But I would say for the people that are really cautious of, you know, not wanting to invest in things that, you know, goes against their moral values, that they might look at individual stocks that do align with where they're at, but know that, you know, they're not building then a really diverse portfolio because they're highly concentrated in a few stocks, for example. Does that make sense?
Oh, to me, it makes total sense. And actually, back in episode 49, I was speaking with Luna Jaffe. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes, along with everything else that we've talked about here. Luna is huge into the psychology of money, our relationship with money. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about having healthy finances, really it starts with our brain and how we feel about money. Because I've talked about this before on the show, I'll probably continue to talk about it for years and years. I still have some big issues when it comes to money. I avoid money right now. Back in my corporate days, I was all about money. I was working in the financial industry purely for the paycheck. And then 3 years ago, when I quit that corporate gig and I started this entrepreneurial path, you know, one of intention, one of purpose, one of giving, one of impact, I shifted radically away from it. Now, I know that I need to come back a little bit more towards the end of the spectrum, but helping somebody like me is challenging because I have a lot of hang-ups. Do you encounter these common hang-ups with, separate from your clients, just in the world that you run in terms of the spectrum of someone who's worshiping money, which is what I used to do, versus somebody who's avoiding money? Do you have a resource, or whether it's a blog post or a book, maybe even other than yours, that somebody can absorb so that they can start to really develop a healthy relationship with the role of money in their life?
Yeah, I actually, one of the things that I noticed recently that kept coming up in different conversations I was having, whether it was with friends or clients or prospective clients or whatnot, was this fear of spending money. So that's, it was really interesting where I would talk to people and I'd say, tell me a little bit more about this or that, or what you enjoy doing, what your passions are, those types of things. And, you know, they'd start telling me about things. And for example, like travel. Oh, I'd love to travel more. And then I'd be like, okay, well, you know, why don't you? Oh, because it's so expensive. Oh, okay. Well, where would you like to go? So, you know, really kind of taking people down this path of figuring out, well, if we were to put a number on that dream, what would that cost? And sometimes it's not as expensive as people think. Or sometimes, you know, and then we talk about, well, would you remember this for the rest of your life or for a long time? Would this be, you know, something you'd look forward to? Oh, yeah. And it would be like a once in a lifetime thing. And I would just love to do that. And so just kind of getting people comfortable with that it's okay to spend money on things,
yeah,
you know, that really bring them joy. Because I think so often we feel like guilty, right? Like there's this guilt associated with money. Like I shouldn't spend money on that because...
I do. I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of reminds me, a really smart woman once wrote that spending money becomes an issue when it's spent mindlessly on things that don't bring us happiness, or when we spend that money fruitlessly in an effort to solve problems that are internal. Guess who said that?
I don't know. Who?
That was you. In your book. I just quoted you. Oh, yeah. Oh, playing coy with me. Nicely done. Well, it's interesting. I mean, when you think about all of these different places that we can go, listening to podcasts or reading books, when people are thinking about money, you know, we've become so indoctrinated that it's important to have money that we no longer question why. And that maybe what we're really seeking, not money is the conduit that we think we're going to get it, is self-respect or security or freedom, love, you know, power. There's all these different kinds of things. So it's there's a lot of people that I still see that are blindly chasing money. There's a lot of people that I know that are like me who are not scared to spend money. I don't mind spending money. It's just on the income side of things. It's kind of like anytime that money enters into what I do for quote work, I start to think it's starting to tarnish it. Like I feel like the impact that I'm making in the world is good, but I want everything to be free. Like I just want people to be able to consume what I put out there. That's really challenging. And I'm sure other people, hopefully they'll tell us in comments in the show notes, what challenges that they're having, and maybe you and I combined, we can help some folks out if they tell us what's on their mind.
Yeah, Joel, I see that a lot with people when they are launching their own businesses, is this fear of charging what you're worth. And I think that's something that's, you know, can really be a challenge for a lot of people. And I know it was a challenge for me when I first launched Gen Y Planning, because you want to help so many people, but you also want your time. You also want to be compensated for your time, and figuring out where those things meet and how to build a profitable business while also being mindful of your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk a little bit about something special you have with your book. I was hoping that I'd ask you, you know, as a certified financial planner, you got to use Excel spreadsheets from time to time. And I was hoping to talk some spreadsheet action with you. We'll see mm-hmm. another time. I do want to ask you, though, as far as the book goes,
yeah,
where do I go to see more, to read more?
So I'm super excited. I'm launching it January 30th. And so by the time this podcast is out, it will be available on Amazon. It's going to be a Kindle version, and it's $4.99. So please go check it out. What You Should Have Learned About Money But Never Did. And I would absolutely love it if you did enjoy the book, or if you didn't, if you could write a review on Amazon and let me know your thoughts. I really welcome any feedback. It's my first book that I've done, and it's kind of been this labor of love after a year and a half of, you know, writing blog posts. I really wanted to figure out a way of, you know, how can I kind of take all of these ideas from the blog and combine them into an easy to read format that really lays out for my readers what goes into, becoming more empowered with their finances.
So if I go right now, as we're recording this, if I go to genyplanning.com/GYP-ebook, there's a page that's specific to people who can potentially win a free quick start session with you. How long is that?
Yeah, so I'm giving away a free financial planning session with me. I call it my quick start session. Go sign up. We're going to choose a winner in February. And so check it out. It's an hour and a half long call. We dive deep into financial planning topics, and then I shoot you an email with recommendations after our call. And I would, you know, I would love it if people checked it out, if people were interested, if they signed up.
Sounds pretty nifty to me. So for the folks who are just generally interested in you and what you're creating, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so check out genyplanning.com. If you ever want to shoot me an email, it's really easy. It's just Sophia, S-O-P-H-I-A, at genyplanning.com. And if you are on Twitter, I love Twitter. So at Sophia Berra is my Twitter handle, S-O-P-H-I-A-B-E-R-A. I'm on Twitter all the time. So let's hang out. Let's chat. Right.
And where can we get the maximum SaaS level from you? Do we have to meet you in person at an event?
I don't know. It's on Twitter a lot. But
Twitter? Okay, good.
It is in person, yeah. But when, I don't know, I think my Twitter handle says, or profile says something about how I also hate fax machines. So, yeah, but, you know, the SaaS is the sass is always there underlying what I do.
Well, thanks a ton for sharing your insight with us. And I'm super excited for you, for your new book, and for everything that you're doing. It's really encouraging to me to see people like you helping folks who don't have a ton of cash. And coming from the financial industry that I did and seeing a lot of the things that I can't unsee, it's just a total breath of fresh air to see how you're adding value to people's lives and helping them with a relationship with money. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Joel. I'm so honored because I know your background in finance. And so it really does mean a ton when you're able to really have a lot of different, you know, financial people that have come into your life, and for you to say that I'm different, or I'm creating work that really sets me apart from other people out there. That makes me really proud.
So there you go. A couple of Minnesotans representing for our community, our lifestyles, and aligning our money with our values. If you're feeling what Sophia's putting down, and it's still February 2015, go to genyplanning.com/GYP-ebook. Sign up for your shot at a free quick start session with Sophia. She's giving away a 90-minute video call where you'll discuss two financial topics. Anything goes, folks. And then she sends you an email with recommendations after a call. To find links to Sophia's book, her Gen Y planning website, social media profiles, nerdy Warren Buffett letters to shareholders, and more, check out this episode show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM067. And hey, we're friends, right? Can I ask you for solid? Will you let me know how I'm doing with this whole Smart and Simple Matters thing? No, I'm seriously, like, I need to know so I can design future episodes and content for what you need, not what I think you want. Doesn't matter what format your insight takes, iTunes review, comment on the show notes, email to joel@valueofsimple.com, a tweet with the old Tweety Bird thing. You know, my handle is @JoelZaslavsky. It's all good. I'm just grateful that you and I are connected through the show. I really, really want to thank you for listening. And please let me know what it's going to take to keep you coming back. I will tell you in the next episode what's shaken with Simple Rev and experience curating. But for now, it's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.